Hello, welcome to Circulus, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition homebrew campaign setting. I will be your DM for the evening. I am Crash, and I am not in the World of Warcraft Alpha. With me today are several people who are, and some who are not. Let's start with Chris. Chris, who are you playing, and where can we find you online?
I'll be playing both Galen Kaldor and Vexar and Silvor. One's a bard, one's a ranger.
And we're going to have many conversations between the two of them.
Oh, God.
I'm sure.
That should be entertaining.
All right. you can find me on Twitter at Akari_mag, or you can find me on my podcast, which will have a new episode up today, at azerothctd.com.
And next on the list is Tom, who will not be joining us this evening, but he would be playing Punk otherwise, our much-loved gnome barbarian with a heart of gold. We don't know where he got it. But he has... It's one of the things in the portable hole with Little Buddy the Chicken. We don't know where he got that either. But we also have Jen. Jen, who are you playing and where can we find you?
I am playing Meepo Chipclaw. She's a kobold sorcerer and she's a kid. And she likes the color purple. You can find me. My website is Book of Jen, where all my stuff ends up at some point, or at least most of it. And you can also find me on Twitch as Queen of Haiku.
Fantastic. And we also have Matt. Matt, who are you playing?
I will be playing Aristobulus Ravenscroft, human wizard.
We also have Eric. Eric, who are you playing, and where can we find you?
Hello, everyone. I'm playing Obi Metalcaster. I am a dwarf cleric. I like long walks on the beach, all those different things. You can catch me on Twitter at Synergy007. That's SynRgy 007. And you can go to VoteToKick.com. We have a new episode, actually, our new series, Open the Geek, will be out shortly. Thank you.
And if I remember correctly, you called me about recording a commercial for Openly Geek that I can put at the end of these recordings that we're doing for this show.
Correct.
So we can add more advertising for your stuff.
Bumper was completed. I just got to finish editing.
Fantastic.
Azeroth Coast to Coast bumper.
That's okay. No one listens to these recordings, so it's not like the advertising does anything. I mean, I said the quiet part out loud.
Yep.
I gotta stop doing that. And last but certainly not least, returning from his epic adventure where he was shooting all the things in Battle Royale and doing four-player co-op in other games where you tried not to die versus zombies, Logan. Logan, who are you playing this evening?
Best not think about that. I am playing as Fennec, a dragonborn paladin.
And wagon aficionado.
Yes. All the wagons.
That played an integral role in our last episode. Did you get a chance to listen to it?
I listened to some when I heard that I was hanging off with stuff.
You were hanging off with giant blimp.
But then you got to fire a ballista.
You did?
That's not
but
a wagon.
But he landed with a superhero pose.
But here's the thing. Where was the wagon?
The wagon?
The giant metal wagon.
Well, let's get into the recap because some of this will be explained. There are no wagons anymore. Fennec went on a rampage. you were able... The employees of the Vicontessa Ravenscroft did try to do their best to hide all the wagons. They tried to hide them in the barn, which didn't work so well because that's one of the places where you can keep wagons. They tried painting signs that said, "Not a wagon," on the wagons. You didn't fall for that either. The reason why you ended up hanging upside down from a blimp was because they were keeping the blimp in the barn too, and in your mad rampage, you might have smashed a few things that shouldn't have been smashed, including some levers that activated, say, a trap door that opened up the entire roof and then launched the blimp, and your foot was just in the wrong spot at the wrong time to get tangled up in one of the guy wires.
I am so proud of my dragonborn.
What I try to do, I get very nervous when I am NPCing a player character because I really want to have them be the way that the player wants them to be played. And I'm so glad I was able to do that for you. thank you for giving me that honor.
However, there's one slight thing. You should have let me, with the ballista bullet, whatever that was, slide. Hang. I could have ride with the wagon while shooting the ballista.
There were no wagons left at that point.
Well,
we have total carnage. There are no wagons. Only Zool. Welcome to Circulus, where we have more pop culture references from the 80s than Ready Player One.
That I still don't get, because I am like 14.
That's okay. I actually didn't get into Ready Player One. I bought the book, but couldn't get through it. But never mind about that.
I'm listening to the audiobook right now.
That's how I got it. I got the audiobook, and I can't finish it.
Yeah, I'm reading the book right now, and I'm just not sure at all.
If I don't have buy-in with the main character, it falls flat. And for some reason, it's just not working for me. But never mind. This is not a book review podcast. This is a Dungeons & Dragons game.
We need a book review podcast.
We could, but we'd all have to read the same book.
That's true.
We'll all review different books. But no, really, in Chapter 3, the plot really comes together. What book are you reading? That doesn't come true at all in mine. Never mind.
Does comic book count?
Why not?
Their literature. Yeah. But let's move on. So there was this epic battle, an adamantine dirigible, or adamantite. I forget exactly what it's called in Dungeons & Dragons, but basically a really powerful, almost indestructible metal. The dirigible was made out of it, thanks to Galen. That it was his life's work, and he did a remarkable job with it, except when it crashed and burned the first time. Ari managed to keep it from crashing and burning this time, and during the battle, he misty-stepped down to the ground because he decided it would be a great idea to fight frost giants face-to-face as opposed to from a height advantage, leaving Fenix to man the ballista. Fenix was convinced by Thava, and the rest of the party didn't notice because they weren't there to see it. He was convinced by Thava that he missed a wagon and he should go down to take care of that wagon quickly. Metagaming here, you failed a save against a charm spell. So he took the quickest route to the wagon, which was straight down, survived the fall. It wasn't that far. He left a small crater. Realized when he landed that he'd done a really bad thing, but then managed to heal Obame at the last minute.
Seems like me.
So all the frost giants are dead. Thava, we're assuming, escaped on the adamantine dirigible. You have a basic heading of which way they went, or which way she went, but she could have changed direction as soon as she was out of sight. There was some cloud cover in the air, so she could have gone up through there and then been untraceable. And there is a, for want of a better word, a debriefing afterwards. Because I'm sure that Ari has some questions for his mom about some of the spells that she managed to cast when he didn't even know that she was capable of casting spells.
Yes, he is very interested in that.
Well, she picks up a thing here or there.
That she picked up more than one.
Yes, she did. There was one particular spell that she used at the end, which basically fires beams of radiant sunlight at the target. And she, and I misspoke in the recording from last time, she incinerated one of the frost giants from the knees up. They don't exist anymore. It's basically just a pair of boots with smoke coming out of the top of them. But she decided that she needed to know that spell after she had some business dealings with a vampire that she didn't care to have any more business dealings with again. She didn't know they were a vampire at the time, and she felt kind of upset that she was in a situation like that. So she decided that she would be able to do something about it the following time. But she doesn't give you a lot of straight answers about where she received her training.
That's okay, but the fact that she has it intrigues him. And he is now at least somewhat more aware, it wasn't very clear to Ari where the magical genes came from. Now it is very clear where they came from.
Well, she does have servants do the laundry for her.
Yeah.
So she does, and they tend to buy the clothing for her too. So she doesn't always know where it comes from.
Yeah.
Magical genes.
Thank you. I'm glad someone got the reference.
Yeah, it took me a minute.
Or everyone else got it, and they were like, that's not funny. If I laugh, I'd encourage him. I'm not encouraging him.
That's more like it.
That too. Now, you actually do have very few servants in the villa at this point. Most of them, at the point that you arrived, were in league with Thava or hired by Thava, and they sort of they booked it, to use a phrase that Chris uses a lot, shortly after Thava decided to make her getaway also, for various reasons. Some of them do remain. Most of them were very low ranking to begin with, below Thava's notice in some cases. Melvin stuck around. He's been a servant there for a while, and he's one of the higher ranking ones now, which is totally taking him by surprise. And he's much more nervous now that he's one of the ones in charge of the other servants than he ever was before, when he was just, you know, doing what he was told.
Right.
But, you know, good for Melvin, character development. Yeah. And in another 50,000 episodes, you'll be fighting dragons with him or something.
Yay!
Perhaps.
Probably not.
The mother coming out and doing that was quite unseen. I didn't think that was going to be a thing, and that kind of made Obeim, now that he's reflecting on it, kind of uneasy. Just something about it is uneasy.
Well, make no mistake, she's still incredibly racist.
I agree.
And in your conversations with her, she makes a few remarks where she doesn't even think anything of it. She thinks she's being polite, but she's definitely not saying polite things, and I'm not going to go into the details for it. But she's very protective of her family, but that doesn't mean that she's an incredibly nice or progressive person. Let's put it that way.
Just can't shake this feeling about her, though. It's really something about her, because you know Obeim's good at insight. Something about her, just he doesn't get.
But you can't shake this feeling deep inside of you.
I can't fight this feeling anymore. God damn it.
We are horrible people.
We are terrible.
All right.
Well, it's good because I still have no idea what you guys are talking about.
That's okay.
That's
I would
good.
Say you'll understand when you're older, but no, you won't, because you'll have
no,
to just go back
won't.
And no, but here's the thing, Logan, you are in a better place to understand this than most generations have in understanding the previous generation, because everything that we grew up with is being rebooted now.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
A lot of songs too.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So eventually you will be Captain America going, I got that reference.
Honestly, that's usually me when y'all talk about like games and movies I haven't seen yet. Going,
well, that too.
Yeah, once in a while I get the reference. Today has been good.
So to finish off Bertha's plot line for Tom, she and the Vicontessa do come to an arrangement. She's going to stop pressuring the dwarves to deliver more ore that they can't deliver. The main reason she wanted all of that metal and ore to begin with, and was being very inflexible about it, was because of the dealing she had with Thava's employer. And that deal is no longer viable, considering they tried to kill her son.
Yeah, so that's not a good
one. That tends to be a deal breaker in most situations.
Yeah. Ari's not necessarily taking it personally, but I could see where his mother might. Yeah.
Well,
we've already
you did
had
have
dealings
to roll a death
Thava,
saver too.
Yeah, I did. I did, and that's a mark on my soul, for lack of a better word.
Speaking of marks on your soul, you don't feel any different at all after using the amulet.
No, I only had to use it once, and I hope it wasn't especially damning, as it were. But we'll find that out later, I'm sure.
Well, give me an Arcana check.
Well, that I'm actually good at. So 13 and 10 is 23.
All right. Well, you do a lot of introspection, and you don't see anything has changed after using the amulet. It was quite powerful. It doubled the damage that you would have otherwise dealt to the frost giant that you used it on. Heaven knows how much damage you'd have done if you hadn't been using a cantrip, or if you had crit.
Right.
Or if you stayed in the darn thing and started getting higher ground and shooting stuff. But, you know, we won't go and that and be bitter because I can kill everybody.
I got lucky with the ballista once. I wasn't counting on that twice.
And Fenix was up there to keep firing the ballista, which was something that could totally be done as an NPC, and I wouldn't have to make a lot of life-changing decisions for him.
I figured Fenix might have had, or Fenix had maybe slightly more experience with such items than I did.
That's fine. You owe
I
me
have experience you owe me with everything. Here.
That's okay. You owe
especially
me some adult diapers.
Objects.
Yeah.
He owes all of us some adult diapers.
Okay. On that note, so Bertha's dealings are done, and she heads off into the sunset, then realizes she's going the wrong way, turns around, and comes back the other way. she's been here for quite a while. Galen.
Hello.
What would you like to do?
Galen wants to go off and try and find his dirigible now that he knows that it's still intact and has been stolen by some crazy woman that he knows nothing about.
I'm assuming during the debriefing you find out that she's probably a dragonborn.
Yes.
Yeah, and we could give him that much.
And a spellcaster of no small talent.
Galen, being the arrogant little gnome that he is, has no doubt that her power is no match for the great Galen Galdor.
Okay, well, Galen has a quest.
Dun, dun, dun.
Find his dirigible.
All right, well, the dirigible did head off to the west, so you do ride off into the sunset, and you don't find yourself turning around and going back the other way. The rest of the party, however, I am assuming at this point that you are thinking you should be heading back to Coomeridge. That tends to be your port of call for the most part.
That is Ari's plan. At a minimum, we have starting to build a base of operations there. If nothing else, we have our farm that we now have to enjoy, or at least working on. So that's where he's going to start. He at least has to probably at least return there to talk to Lord Idris, tell him that the agreement has been delivered, and things should start moving very soon. We've had a brief little who's the wetsits with Thava. But that has been resolved, and I believe my mother and her team or her folks will start getting things done as soon as possible.
And they even cobbled together what's left of a wagon with the first payment for the magical blue roses included. Fenix. There is no Logan, only Fenix. Fenix is given strict instructions by the Cartwright to not go near the wagon. Just not. Don't even look at it.
Ari will ask him as a personal favor.
Don't even think about it.
I clench my fist at the growl.
Okay, so give me a charisma save.
You guys are going to love this one.
You ought to be decent at it.
I don't know if I get him a hundred. If we get him a hundred,
oh no, it's like a 23.
Damn!
That's pretty good. So this Cartwright looks very intimidating in the way that a grandparent can be intimidating. It's not about physical presence; it's about emotional presence and tone of voice and stature. But it just all washes over Fenix like it's not even there. So you are not intimidated at all by this person.
It's not that. Yeah. That wagon isn't that perfect. It's not shiny. It's not sparkly. It's got any jewels on it.
So you only kill pretty wagons?
Yes.
I don't know if that was more messed up or not.
Ari,
I know.
I'm judging this wagon from its looks. It looks disgusting.
Ari, your mom leans over to you and says, "If he breaks this wagon, make him carry the gold himself all the way to Grimridge."
Oh, hey! Hey! If you make him carry the gold, you'll never see it again.
Yeah.
So, I would require strength checks to make sure he was able to carry it well. Coomeridge is a long ways away. You yes. will roll a one eventually.
Days away.
Easy. Be nice to it, Fenix.
Wagon Church, here I come.
Your wagon church is already being built. Or, well, kind sort of. Yeah, kind of, sort of. They have a start if they don't keep having strange children stealing from them. Oh,
it's
wait. No,
twigs.
You don't know. They were robbed by children. All right, so we are going to fast forward to your arrival in Coomeridge. Because I really don't want to do another two sessions of traveling through the woods again. It's relatively uneventful, except for every time the Fenix looks at the wagon side-eyed and everyone else just stiffens. Obame makes great use of his mending spell to keep the wagon moving. it is necessary. It was repaired as much as it could be, but there are some structural issues. The axles, both axles are bent.
I can fix that.
No.
No.
No, you can't.
You're being just fine.
Oh, I love this game so much.
Washy, washy, go smashy, smashy.
All right. So when you go through Gore's Gate, which, as you know, is the last town you go through before you end up going through the swamp known as the Gores to get to Cumridge Keep, you see that it has been partially rebuilt. There are several houses standing with smoke coming out of the chimneys. There's some leaves that are starting to turn orange, by the way. We are getting into late summer, early fall in this time of year. Meepo, in particular, you feel that you think you can... Now, it's hard to say for sure because you lived most of your life totally underground. But with how you judge time, you are fairly certain that you can stop telling people that you're 4. You think you're 5 now.
Yay.
So you are almost a full-grown kobold.
Almost?
Yeah.
Now I get to be an annoying teenage kobold.
Yeah, man, I'm old.
You can start wearing all black and buying all your clothing from Hot Topic.
Uh-huh.
And listening
weird cursings
to
Claire's Boutique. And,
yeah.
Oh,
listening to My Chemical Romance.
We're going to have a rebellious kobold on our hands.
She's going to listen to metal.
And she knows prestidigitation.
Uh-huh. And he has fire and lightning, so yeah. This will be fun.
And Fennis goes around saying that he's her father. So can you control your child? Probably not.
You can try.
They're lawful evil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the children are technically chaotic neutral, but that's another story entirely. All children are chaotic neutral.
Every time she kills something big, I'm going to say, that's my child.
That's my girl. My girl.
Right, so you head through the gores. You don't even see any zombies in the gores. They've been doing a pretty good job this summer of trying to clear out as much of it as they can. Every now and then, one probably turns up still because it is a swamp, but it's not an issue anymore for the most part. When you get to the town of Cumridge Keep, there are a lot of black banners that are hanging in various places of prominence. Some of them are set up by local residents, but some of them look much more official. What would you like to do?
Obey needs to go to church and pray before he heads to rest. This experience in the past kind of, again, it's really not selling with him well, so he needs to calm himself down a little bit, pray. He also needs to be able to check out the different type of healing he can do himself to maybe improve on his thoughts. He doesn't like it when he's underperforming, even though the damage is good. He wants to improve himself all the time, so that's where he's going to head.
All right. And you do have, I'm trying to remember, you are a cleric of Ilmater?
Correct.
Okay. And there is a temple to Ilmater in town. You are one of the founding members of it. They pretty much relied on your teachings for creating this particular church or temple. And it is quite possible that you are the most powerful cleric in the kingdom right now, considering that most of the churches and temples are for deities that kind of died or were killed off by an ancient green dragon. So guess who's not answering spells anymore? But your god still answers spells, still answers prayers. And you're off going on adventures while everyone's not. So you can do that. Anyone else?
I'm the most powerful wagon boy.
That's not a thing.
Yes, it is. It can be. Make a scroll.
You would need a wish spell for that. That's a level 9 spell.
I ain't touching that spell. Get away from me. I will dispel the hell out of it real quick.
You can't dispel a wish. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I wish for this game to be over.
All right. Good night, everybody.
No.
All right. Well, you do have a local congregation as well that has been trying to build a temple just outside of town. Do you want to go see them?
I'll talk to them, yeah.
Okay. So you go and see them, and you see that they have acquired additional help to the point where they have a definite foundation in place. And from the looks of it, they've been doing some excavation work also. So there's parts of your temple that they're building to Bahamut that are underground that you cannot see, but the amount of earth that's been moved and placed above ground tells you that they've been digging stuff out rather industriously in the month or so that you've been gone.
Good work.
And give me a perception check.
It's funny because I hear the dice roll in the background.
Well, that dice roll was a 3.
All right. No. So everything I just told you. Wait, what?
No, it was a 3.
Okay. So everything that I told you was a gimme where you could see this from some distance away as you're arriving, but you don't see any sign of how they managed to accomplish this. When you left, there was a handful of acolytes, but the main tool they had for building purposes was a plank that they were using as a shovel because their actual shovel had been stolen. But here you go. They've got the beginning of a structure set up.
They used that dang wish spell.
I assure you, if they used a wish spell, you'd see a little bit more than a foundation.
I would see a whole entire army. Wagons.
To be honest, I was looking at the wish spell recently, and for 5th edition, they've nerfed it a bit. You can create stuff with it just by wishing for it, but it's got to be like 25,000 gold or less. And the total cost for this temple that you want is going to be more than that. So they would have been able to wish part of it into being, but not all of it.
I wish for more money.
I wish for more wishes. Doesn't work.
But can't use it multiple times.
You could cast it every day, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I'll cast for a small one of 1,000,000 gold.
It's unfortunately not a paladin spell.
Level spell as well.
Sorry. All right. So the acolytes see you coming, and they are very happy to see you. And they start asking you a bunch of questions, you know, petitions, guidance. He stole my sandwich. No, it was my sandwich. My name was on it. Everything that you would expect to hear from a bunch of kids when their parent comes home, basically. Is there anything you want to talk to them about?
I'm just going to tell them how's the construction going.
Oh, it's coming along swimmingly. Ever since your little friends started helping us.
Little friends?
Little friends.
Yes. Little friends, like the you called her your daughter?
Sweet.
Oh my.
Look at that, Cameron, or not Cameron, Logan, you got a whole following.
At
that moment, you see a kobold stick their head out of one of the tunnels.
Oh.
And they wave to you. They dump a wagon full of dirt. It's like a wheelbarrow, not a full wagon. Let me rephrase. And then they go back into the tunnel.
No. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say like, yeah, that's cool. And then I turn around and I just cry a bit.
He's so sad.
This is all I've ever wanted.
He's happy.
What's everyone else doing?
All right, we'll head to visit Lord Idris and deliver the gold and explain to him the contract will start being fulfilled. He wishes him kind of good luck in the in business dealings with my mother. Should he need to get in contact, a sending spell can usually reach her. And that might be worthwhile, or if he wants, he can have me do the sending. She might be more receptive to messages from me if he needs a quick communication to her.
You can have a conference call or something.
Yeah, a telepathic conference call.
If that thing doesn't exist, you are pretty sure that the Idris family could probably build it.
Yeah.
At this point. If they couldn't, Fiddlepunch could.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be ways to work things out, but everything is now getting started. The balls are rolling. Trains are moving. Tracks are being laid. Oh, wait, wrong metaphor. But yeah,
funny you should say that, but never mind.
Yeah. Things are going along swimmingly, so everything can begin.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you to give me a perception check because you are wearing a robe of eyes.
Uh-huh.
And it's just not worth it at this point. But the somber drapery that you saw in the town is doubly so in here. And as you're explaining all of this, Lord Idris is listening to you and acknowledging what you're saying at the right moments, but he is very obviously distracted.
What happened?
My father's dying.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, sir.
So am I.
How old is he?
65.
impressive. You have my deepest sympathies. If there's anything I could do to make your grief easier. Oh, wait, he's a dying, not dead. Sorry. Back up. I'm sorry to...
He's refusing to see any healers.
Why? I mean, it's his business, I suppose, but...
And members of my family tend to live a lot longer than 65. This came on very fast. He was healthy one day and bedridden the next. This is not natural. This is not normal. Part of me wants to just think that he's my father, so of course I'm going to assume that this isn't right when it's natural causes, but I don't know why he doesn't want a cleric to see him. If it's some kind of disease, they'd be able to cure it.
Perhaps Obame may be of assistance. I don't know. I mean, he's a cleric, but he's not from one of the local deities, so maybe he might be willing to see someone like Obame?
He's refused everyone else.
Can't hurt to ask.
It hurts when he says no.
I understand.
But I see what you're saying.
I understand. That said, the man does sleep from time to time, does he not?
You know, I don't think he sleeps much.
Maybe that's the problem. Or is that the disease?
It's a family trait.
Well, if he doesn't want to be seen, I mean, it is his choice, but it is unusual. I will say that. Could there be outside influence?
If there is, it's not something I can detect.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be magical, although I can't imagine anything else affecting him.
Well, my areas of expertise are, as you are no doubt aware, rather specialized.
Indeed. Most of us, actually, most wizards become a little specialized in an area of magic. Mine is going to be, or is, divination. I'm not entirely as skilled as you or others, but perhaps I can discern what secrets he may be holding. After all, I'm not a priest.
I am happy for any help you are willing to...
Well, the only thing I can think to start with would be at least to perhaps probe his mind. Now, without his permission, that's a lot more difficult.
I would say probably impossible.
But at least it might be worth a talk. I might, and he kind of indicates the robe, this has properties that can let me see things that aren't often immediately visible upon our plane of existence. I can see into the ethereal plane. And is anything that may be hiding there nearby him, perhaps influencing him, I should be able to spot it.
If there is anything in the ethereal plane or astral plane nearby, I would have seen it.
Okay. Then perhaps just talking to me may do some good. After all, I am not a priest.
Again, I'm willing to accept any help you want to offer. And it is, you are getting the sense from this that he's tried it all. Yeah, he's worn down. He's out of options. He's struggling with accepting the inevitable but not wanting to.
Yeah, I figured that. Ari has some insight, so. All right. When would be a good time to meet up with him?
Whenever is good for you.
I am currently unengaged at the moment, so why not take advantage of the time now?
Right this way. Oh, and Meepo, are you here as well?
She can't
probably.
Be. Yeah.
It's up for her.
Along.
Yeah.
And the question then is, did you stick with Ari when he came in, or did you immediately head off and look for your friend?
Oh, I went to go find my friend, of course.
Okay. Ellie Idris.
Hmm.
The youngest of the Lord Idris's children. She is 6 years old, so she's just a bit older than you, but... Hmm. A bit less mature than you in some ways, because kobolds age a bit more rapidly. And also a sorceress.
Yes.
Or sorcerer. Both terms are acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You find her, but she doesn't seem to be really interested in playing right now.
Aw, what's the matter?
Grandpa's dying.
Aw, that's not good. Maybe somebody can help him get him better.
Maybe. And while you're talking, she's using prestidigitation to... create rubber balls that she's throwing against the wall and bouncing, but she's not aiming for this. So they're just flying off and hitting other things in the room, knocking stuff off the shelves. Then she makes another one and she throws it again. It bounces off in another random direction.
That's a neat trick. I want to try too. I'll start joining in, and now we have choices.
There are now three broken windows in her bedroom.
Oops.
Only one of them is from you. She broke the first two already. The local servants are just waiting for her to finish before they come in and fix it, because it's not worth it to fix it over and over again. Truth be told, her dad is probably going to make her fix it herself with mending or something. All right, is there anyone else doing something? We haven't talked to Vex yet.
Nope.
Vex, what have you been doing? You've had enough time. You finished your bow.
Mm-hmm.
So what have you been doing?
I'm also assuming that I've been kind of figuring out how to run a farm.
There has been a learning curve. You did learn early on that an enchanted suit of armor filled with fire is not the best farmhand to give a bale of hay to feed the sheep.
The boys are on patrol duty.
Jackson is more than happy to just do patrol duty. Ross keeps trying to find ways to help. He was actually very good at chopping firewood once he stopped using his sword of fire to chop the wood and used a regular axe. He was able to chop a lot of firewood because they don't tend to get tired, so he did a great job with that. He also loves playing with Shepard because, of course, he does. There was one point where Shepard came over to you and he was holding Ross's arm. Like he found a stick that he thought you would like.
Oh, God. Yep.
And Ross comes over and he looks kind of sheepish. Like, we were playing fetch, but he really only plays fetch with you, I guess. May I have my arm back?
I give him the arm back.
He throws it and Shepard goes to get it again. And there's at least one point where you're not sure if you dreamt it or not, but you think you saw Shepard wearing a makeshift saddle with Mr. Fluffy Tail riding on top.
With the stuff that's going on in this place, I have no doubt I did not dream it.
You're not entirely sure, but you think Mr. Fluffy Tail the squirrel was also holding a stick like it was...
A jousting lance.
Yeah, he was lance. He had a lance.
Okay.
Ross finds ways to amuse himself on the farm. And Punk, for his part, now, he was into buying the farm also. He enjoys it. Sometimes he hangs out in the basement with the door locked and you're not allowed down there for one reason or another. He often goes out for his weekly poker game. 4 or 5 times a week he goes out for his weekly poker game. Clearspring is also being rebuilt, and one of the things that they've built in Clearspring happens to be a tavern, and it is within walking distance if you hustle, so... You think he might have spent some of his time going there.
I'm giving him inspiration to do the hustle.
And you're giving me
I hate you, and I love this game so much. And I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
Now, in your managing of the farm, you did notice some signs that goblins had been in the area, specifically rather small goblins, like goblin children. They've been trying to not be seen. You see evidence that they tried to cover their tracks in some places, but sometimes the attempt to cover your tracks are more obvious than if you had just not tried to cover your tracks. But you don't notice anything missing on the farm that you can't attribute to Punk taking it, or something going horribly wrong with Ross or Jackson. So they don't seem to have done anything, but you know they're in the area.
Okay.
All right. So, Ari.
Yes, we will get to meet. Well, we'll meet again. Fervid?
Yes, Fervid Idris.
Fervid.
Father of Lord Ardent Idris III. You have met him before. You have worked with him. You assisted with their research. Yep. Of course, it was on a level where you were like the first day grad student talking to a bunch of PhDs. One of them was a Nobel laureate.
I'm fetching books and coffee.
Your voice might have cracked once or twice, but you'll never tell. But you know from your interactions with him, this is a brilliant man. And he, even for... Now 65 isn't that old in modern day, or right, in a fantasy world where you have clerics that can cast high-level healing spells. Cure disease is a wonderful spell. But even with that said, he looked to be in the prime of his life at 65. He looked good at 65. There are people who are 30 years old that didn't look as good as he did over 60. But Ardent takes you to Fervid's chambers and announces your presence. First thing that he said that you hear from inside is, "It's not another cleric, is it?" "No, Father, it's not a cleric." "All right." Ardent opens the door, lets you in, says, "If you need anything, I'll be outside." close very well. Behind him. You see the resemblance.
Yeah.
Between.
They look father and son.
No. You see a resemblance between the person on the bed and the person you knew as Fervid Idris.
Right.
But add maybe 30 years, 40 years. Hard
looking
years.
Rough. He's looking rough.
He looks like he's wasting away. There's a lot of muscle mass that's been lost. A lot of wrinkles. Where there aren't wrinkles, the skin is stretched against the what muscle is left and the bone. You're Aristobulus, aren't you?
I am indeed, sir.
I remember you.
I'm glad.
Bright boy.
Thank you.
You'll go far.
I hope to someday perhaps follow in you and Lord Arden's footsteps, perhaps, in your knowledge of arcane matters.
You'll probably get there. You have a good head on your...
I tend to think I do. It has served me tolerably well these last few years, so long as I don't lose it.
Yeah, a few people actively tried to remove it recently, but...
Yeah.
You held on pretty tight.
Thought it would look better somewhere else.
Or in a different shape.
Yeah.
Or state of matter. It was mostly solid. They preferred liquid.
Yeah.
A little bit of chunks here and there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I took a rather recent good beating, but I made it and they didn't. So I attribute that to the resources of my friends and my family.
You hear a voice in the back of your head.
Yeah,
of course
comes.
You do. I know you know he's not well, but you don't know how not well he is. This is a place of death.
What do you see, O Satan?
I know that when you normally hear someone say he's already dead, it's hyperbole. I don't think it is. I think he's already.
To back up one moment, both the Idrises were heavily studying necromancy to deal with the undead problem, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it isn't out of line that they might have a lot of necromantic, quote-unquote, taint about them from their studies, from dealing with the undead in various fashion.
Give me an Arcana check.
It's a 9, so that goes to 19.
Your sense of their studies of necromancy is that it was very similar to the way that researchers will study a very virulent strain of a plague, in which they would poke it with a very long stick, but try not to get anywhere near it.
Okay, so they've studied it mostly from book knowledge, not necessarily from practical experience.
They wouldn't try. You never saw them cast any spells that were themselves necromantic. They were looking at it from the outside.
Right. Okay. All right. So to return to our telepathic conversation, can you see what did this to him?
That would be something that happened in the past. I don't know how long ago, but there is no sense of life in here other than...
I will turn my attention back to the Fervid. I am curious, sir, about your recent development in your health.
Of course you are.
You are a great wizard. You could find some way to defeat that which is clearly affecting you. Take a look at yourself in the mirror.
I don't need to. I know what I look
like. Clearly. And
like death.
Exactly my point, sir. What is the cause of this? Why? Why do you not seek treatment?
Because the treatment won't do anything. It won't do anything.
You've already gone too far, haven't you?
I went far enough. I went as far as I needed to go.
Perhaps that was too much.
Nothing is too much for Kroon. Nothing is too much for me. They are safe
that
now.
I do understand. I understand that. Recent developments of my own have taught me something new about my own family. But there's always a way to find, there's always another way. Let me put it that way. And if you've already gone past a certain point, good sir, then I wish you well in your journey, and I offer my deepest regrets.
I appreciate it. I didn't know so. I went into the size of.
I understand.
Everything has.
That I understand, even more so perhaps than others.
God, what did he do? That's what my brain's going crazy. the narration. What did he do?
L-I-C-H. That's what I'm thinking.
He's falling at Cactus that day.
No. I have a strong suspicion. We're going to see Lord Fervid again somewhere. Although he'd be slightly more skeletal. And he may have a little fun thing called a phylactery.
What is that?
Liches love phylacteries.
So for those of you who are unfamiliar with how liches work in Dungeons and Dragons, a high-level spellcaster typically a wizard, but they can be other classes as well, is able to create basically a container that will hold their soul. And through doing this, enter a state of undeath, where they basically live forever and continue to cast spells and continue to do their research. Now, these people tend to be incredibly evil and self-centered, because why else would they try to do this?
Right.
Nothing you've seen from Fervid says that he's self-centered at all.
No, but that's... And this is more the player. Ari is still kind of wondering what he's done to himself. But clearly he's gone too far in whatever experiments or whatever he's trying to do to assist Coomeridge. And that's just his opinion. But before he leaves, Ari will give him one more parting statement. And basically to say that, sir, the load does not have to handle entire or be handled upon your shoulders. You now have allies in this town. Myself, my allies... We will be glad to give you any assistance that we can. While I am not your equal in magical knowledge and power, I have friends who could help, and we will do our best to help Coomeridge.
Yours and your friends. Though that is one of the reasons why I don't regret it.
Very well.
Coomeridge will survive. In no small part to your effort. It doesn't need me.
But your son needs you. Your family needs you. And therefore I say, think of them first.
They're going to get me all misty-eyed.
are we watching This Is Us or playing D&D?
I know.
So we had to dispel the sad moment. Ari will kind of nod his head and leave the room.
Ardent is waiting outside, and he doesn't say anything as he closes the door again. But there's a bit of an expectant look on his face. Almost hope, but not enough to be hope.
Yeah, no, Ari kind of will just shake his head, no, but I am going to, you know, kind of like, he'll nod, like, let's step away from his room before we talk. And once they get 20 or 30 feet away, he'll be like, he's done something to himself. I'm not certain what. Whatever he's done, he's undertaken with willful choice. He's done it deliberately, and he knows the cost involved, and he's trying to, I guess, sacrifice himself for the good of the town, which I tried to show him that, look, he doesn't have to do this alone. He has help, but that did not seem to move him at all.
We can all sacrifice each other.
There's a voice in the back of your head again, and it says,
yeah.
I think you're right, but I think you have your tense wrong.
Yeah, well, past tense.
I think he might have made that sacrifice before.
Yeah, long before, and now he's paying the price. Yeah. He's made the sacrifice, and now the payment is coming due. And I'll tell that to Lord Arden. It's just, I don't know what he did. He's too cagey, too clever a man to say outright what he's done. But I'm sure there's evidence of it. If you could find it. I suspect
even now he's trying to protect me.
Exactly, he's trying to protect you from learning what he's done. The cost he felt was not too great to pay for himself, but such that he felt that he had to shield it from his family, which I understand to a degree, but I there's just not enough information that he's going to tell us about what happened. He feels, even perhaps to me, that he owes us some sort of protection from whatever he's done to himself or to whatever he's done to help the town, whatever that was. And I don't know where
everything
it came.
To help the town.
Exactly, and more so than anyone else. And now that whatever he sacrificed, that payment is coming due. And I think at this time he's simply trying to either come to peace with it, and then perhaps protect us from any other repercussions of that price. So,
you know, he asked me to turn off the crematorium.
Is it no longer? It is no longer needed, is it not?
We don't really need it anymore, but. We've been using it for 100 years. It's tradition. If I tried to stop using it, the townsfolk would rise up against me.
Well, it is useful to dispose of garbage, I suppose. I mean, it is powered by
his fire face
elemental.
Clouds at that. Yeah. You realize you referred to something that they used to dispose of the bodies of their loved ones as garbage disposal.
That's not what I intended. I meant more like from personal refuse, but...
Well, I know what you intended, but he tries to take it that way, but his knee-jerk reaction.
Right, his, how dare you? No.
Yeah, and he's a diplomat. He doesn't go off on you for that. But
right, and Ari has persuasion and insight, so he's kind of like, no, never mind. So, you know, we'll move past this here. At this point, I would say he's a stubborn old man, and I mean, you can agree with me on that one for sure, but he
runs in the family.
And wizards as a whole tend to be a little stubborn about certain things. We all have our little nuances and ways we like to do things. And especially as we get older, we get set in those ways. And so Ari, as far as I'm concerned, Lord Fervid is, he's chosen his end and nothing will dissuade him from it.
Well, then I'm glad I didn't get my hopes up.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So am I.
Ari will then leave his presence and perhaps then head to the farm that he is at least co-owner of.
Okay. And you are able to find Meepo as well. You follow the sound of breaking windows.
Shattering glass. Where is Meepo?
In Ellie's room.
Yeah.
They've discovered that once they shattered all the panes of glass in her window, they were able to prestidigitate those bouncing balls and throw them clear across the courtyard.
Are we having fun, children?
We're trying. Look how far that one went.
Ellie, on the other hand, totally understands that she is in trouble because her dad is still with you.
Yeah.
And he does not particularly look amused. He's like,
Ari does not have the mending cantrip, so.
I'm praying right now.
Yeah, Meepo, come along. It is time.
Ellie, Idris, you clean up this mess right now.
Yes, I'm still crying over the army I have.
She casts a mending spell, the windows back together. And the other windows. Yes, father, she runs out the door.
Oh, sorry.
Ari loves it. This is you are chaos personified, and he just enjoys the daylights out of it. It's just like, she is 4, and she can do magical spells that I couldn't do, in 20 years,
She's five now. Yes.
I'm five now.
You're five now. Excellent.
I'm five now.
We should have a party.
Yay, celebrate. D&D party.
You guys celebrate when people turn five?
It is common to celebrate the day of one's birth in our world, yes. Usually it involves imbibing several drafts of alcohol, but I think we'll forego that today, and perhaps we can just find you a cake.
Okay.
I really don't want to think about what would happen if Meepo was under the influence of something.
Yeah, no. Well, Gear Grinder special is bad. So let us perhaps see if we can find a baker or a confectioner in town.
Okay. And
the day is kind of young, so it's quite easy to find a bakery. They do have some cakes that are already made that they can pretty up a bit with frosting or whatever.
Okay. Meepo, what would you like?
I don't know. I've never had a cake.
Let's see what choices we have and what flavors we might partake of.
Okay.
He'll let Meepo go wild. Whatever. Whatever. Whatever is needed. Ari will produce a platinum coin to the baker. And whatever the young kobold wishes, and hopefully that will be plenty.
That is a lot of cake. Platinum coin?
Oh, my.
The baker throws in a wheelbarrow to carry the cakes.
There you go.
I want a red one and a purple one. And
I'm deducting my platinum coin from my funds.
I imagine that before you leave the shop, some of them are different colors than when they were when they were purchased.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And more sparkly.
Glitter.
I want all the flavors. I want to try them all, and I want my friends to try them. Can you make
that's
a cake
right.
With
Meepo
a,
doesn't
with
even
cake?
Know that there's more kobolds in Kumris.
She doesn't. She has no idea.
Well, we're
no
gonna
told her.
We can head to the nearest inn from the bakery and share the cakes perhaps with some others there, and then we'll take a few back to the farm. I'm not sure where the temple is in relation to the farm.
They're fairly close.
Okay.
They're all in the same general area where land was a bit cheaper due to it being a bit closer to wilderness area.
And perhaps like nobody's living there anymore?
Well, those individuals are currently deceased, yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. Okay, so after bakery, farm. Okay. If Fenix is not there, Ari will perhaps at least go towards the temple to go see how it's working out. If Meepo wants to tag along, that's fine. Otherwise, mm-hmm. she can stay back at the... I guess we have a house to stay in at the farm, right? Or is that still being built?
Oh, no, the farm is built.
Okay.
The reason why the farm was as expensive as it was is because the buildings were already there.
Right, okay. So, up to Meepo what she wants to do. That's Ari's plan, is after the bakery, we'll go to the farm, at least make a pit stop to kind of relax for a bit, and then head over to the temple to see how Fenix is doing.
Okay.
And we'll bring him some cake.
Yay! Yay.
Fenix, how are you doing?
It's so beautiful.
The army.
All right, so you arrive, and Meepo, the first thing you notice is that there's some excavations in place and some stonework that's been laid, and you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's kobold work.
Mr. Fenix, what? There's kobolds. I haven't seen kobolds about a year. I'm at 5 now, by the way.
At the sound of your voice, about 12 kobolds run out of the tunnels and give you a group hug.
Yay!
You know each of them. I'm not going to go through their names, but you know each and every one of them.
Larry, Jerry, Barry, and Harry.
How did you guys get here? What are you doing?
All right. Well, to summarize, things did not go well after you left. There were some repercussions to the servant of the Great One that had been sent to them being set on fire and then promptly drowned and sent down a whirlpool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the 12 that are left, there were about 20 to 25 of them when you left. These 12 were the last remaining ones. And the reason why they're here is because some dwarves found them and saved them, basically. Somewhat reluctantly, but they were hired by Ardent Idris after a conversation with Ari about how interesting kobolds were and that he should probably look into it. So he delegated.
And here they are.
And here they are. And there, it was already established in their clan that Fenix was a great one, so it just followed that they would team up with other servants of the Great One.
Yeah, that works.
So here they are building a temple for him.
Uh-huh. Okay, guys, come have some cake. I don't know if you've had cake. Have some cake.
They have never had cake before, and it is delicious.
Meepo's having a great birthday.
She deserves it.
She does. She's getting killing blows.
Yes. I killed some frost giants, and I guess they were all frost giants. I'm like telling my friends all the stuff I said while I was gone.
You killed a cultist.
I did.
In the salt mines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Retroactively, you found out that cultist happened to be a worshiper of the Great One.
Oops. Well, he was trying to kill. He was trying to kill us. So.
Yeah, it was him or you, and you decided it would be him.
Mm-hmm.
You leave out the part where he was a fellow follower of the Great One. You didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't seem appropriate to share that part.
Yeah, but they are very happy to see you. They think your outfit is fantastic and very practical.
Mm-hmm. Of course, all the sparklies and the outfit and the.
And the umbrella hat.
I'm wearing a scarf and the umbrella hat. Yes. Yes. Meepo is a high fashion plate. For She sets the styles.
Yes.
All right. So you have a great time catching up and learning about all the horribleness that has happened on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming you're heading to the farm now? Or is there something else you want to do here?
Nothing I need to do.
Yeah. I mean, I could hang out with the kobolds for however long, but...
They can't really hang out because they've got work to do. They've got a temple to build. And why aren't you helping?
farm.
I can help.
Because she's apprenticed.
I'm a what?
She's apprenticed.
What's apprenticed?
You somewhat work with Ari. Let's leave it at that.
The Great One's daughter. She doesn't need to work.
Yeah. She is an apprentice.
You've been an apprentice before because they had a different sorcerer that was their spellcaster, and he was teaching you stuff.
Okay.
Well, sometimes he was a he.
So. Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes he was her dad. And maybe her mom before that. She's not sure.
Yeah. And it was an honorific title because you don't know which ones were actually your parents. They have right. communal egg nests. Mm-hmm. But that's besides the point.
Right. And kobolds don't really care about gender anyway. So.
No, they don't. They are gender fluid, literally.
Yes. Well, wait, how many kobolds are female and how many are male in this group she's in?
They're NA.
And they're her clan.
We're going to say...
Because tomorrow that answer could be different.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a while for that to happen. No, it wouldn't be. It takes a while for that to happen, and we're going to say that you're not going to be... I'm assuming you're not going to be living with them long enough. You're just going to be visiting for the most part because you are an apprentice to a powerful wizard.
Yeah.
Right. For that to really matter.
Okay.
I don't know about powerful, but hey.
Okay.
Is Meepo the oldest kobold?
No.
Okay,
not by a long shot.
Good, because she doesn't really want to lead.
You are certain that you are the most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But you are not the oldest.
Not the oldest. Can't lead.
However, they do let you know that they already have a few nests. They've been here for a month, so. Give it some time. There'll be more than 12.
Good.
You'll have a whole bunch of brothers and sisters.
That'll be great.
Kobold army.
Kobold army. Yep. Make some more.
Fenix will die of joy. and then we'll fast forward to a scene where they've all hatched and Fenix visits and they're all just climbing over him, like in a swarm.
In the sky, small in the air. Day.
He does that thing where you take the baby and you toss them up in the air and catch them. But they've got claws. They attach themselves to the ceiling and don't come back down.
I spin one of the kobolds to my finger like a basketball.
They laugh and enjoy it. But that's in the future. The eggs haven't hatched yet. Okay, so you head to the farm. And as you arrive in the farm, you see basically some makeshift targets that have been set up as a firing range. Some of them... Now, these are like the traditional archery targets where they're made out of straw that's been wrapped in a cloth with a big bullseye painted on it. But several of these are missing the center. And you see Akari with a very familiar bow, but from the shots he's making with it, I said Akari, you see Vex, played by Akari, with a very familiar bow, and the shots he's making with it tell you that this bow's had some upgrades.
Mr. Vex, have some cake. It's my birthday. I'm 5.
You're still moving the wheelbarrow around. There's some icing smeared to the sides, and there's some fairly large, half-mushed pieces, some of them with claw marks in them.
I met my clan, my kobold clan. They're hanging out with Mr. Fenn.
I'm assuming I know about the kobolds, yeah?
Yeah, you live close
enough. He doesn't know you know that.
I don't know what I know, so...
okay.
Yeah, in this case, Vex is aware that the kobolds moved in. He tried to hide this from Ponk.
Yeah. Ponk does not have a happy relationship with kobolds.
Ponk would rather have a basketball hoop and just throw them in there.
They have not had a discussion on the matter. It might be one of those things where...
I was waiting for backup, really.
Yeah. It's one of those things where everyone knows, but if they don't talk about it, it hasn't happened.
Okay.
Or it might just be that Ponk was distracted by his weekly poker nights.
Nights. Love it.
I'll just grab a little bit of the cake that's not covered in claws. Just nibble on it.
It is delicious.
Happy birthday, love.
Thank you.
Oh, and it was half your required caloric intake for the day. It is all sugar. It is possible they used magic to get that much sugar into that small a piece.
That doesn't surprise Ari at all.
Mm-hmm.
There is a curse on Vex's family. It's called diabetes.
Do you have diabetes? No. Well, you do now.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
That is a Simpsons quote.
You get diabetes, and you got diabetes.
Everyone look under your seat. Don't touch that.
You got diabetes.
You all get diabetes.
So, fun fact, my mom actually does have diabetes, so let's move on.
So does mine.
So do I, actually, so.
I probably have diabetes, I don't know.
No, you don't.
No, you're too young for that.
How am I too young?
You don't have
diabetes. Well, if you had the childhood onset version, maybe.
Yes,
I would hope
but,
your dad knew about that.
Yeah, that's something where there would be some symptoms that would be evident at this point.
Yeah. at the age you are, yeah, I would hope so.
It's called Wagalonia. I'm obsessed.
Well, whatever you do, don't look the symptoms up on WebMD because what it'll turn out is it'll say that either you have cancer or you're pregnant.
Oh.
Yeah, this is going anyway. In weird places, guys.
Welcome to Dungeons & Dragons, everyone.
Dungeons & Dragons.
Where we digress frequently and often.
We change the subject from the game to real life.
What do you say we take a short 5-minute break to try to figure out where we were supposed to be in this session? Because everything we've done was pretty much what I planned to do in the first half hour. It's 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll be right back after these messages. And we're back. Yay. All right.
I would like to just keep taking practice shots.
Okay. So you return.
I want to go find Shepard.
Ari wants to. Well, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
That was it. I want to go find Shepard.
If she's Shepard going finds you. For the puppy, I'll go help her.
Yeah.
you hear barking from the other side of the farm, and there's a Doppler effect as Shepard gets closer and closer and closer to you, and basically just bowls you over and starts licking your face like crazy. Vex, you don't think that much icing is good for a puppy or a full-grown wolf? But it doesn't matter anymore because it's too late.
He's already eaten this.
I'm just gonna stand looking at the abyss as I plot my.
The abyss looks back.
Oh, jeez.
Now that he has a quiet moment, Ari wants to take out the book and the strange metallic contraption that they found in the house where the little girl tried to kill one of our giant friends, our Goliath friends.
Are you gonna create a circle and then like do the Zen?
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see if that's necessary. So okay. He's going to start with the book, do Comprehend Languages ritual on it, since he knows already that it's a language he doesn't know. Basically kind of look over the first 10 or 15 pages. I have a funny feeling it's not going to be terribly exciting.
Well, it depends on how you feel about governments, because it appears to be a collection of essays that were bound into a book after they've been published elsewhere. It appears to be called the Federalist Papers.
Oh, gosh. My daughter just loves you now. Ari will definitely read those, but after the first couple, I'll be like, okay. We'll table this for later reading. And then he wants to try to perhaps do some divinations on the strange contraption that they found. He's not sure what this is. He'll start with detecting magic on it, and then I'm not sure I'm going to do an identify on it.
It appears to have no magical property.
Okay. And his robe has already kind of given it a once-over and doesn't really recognize anything from it. So what he may do, I'm not sure if I want to hold on to this or let Lord Idris look at it.
Give me an insight check.
Okay. I know he's kind of distracted right now. So I might just table this for later investigation. Insight is rolled a 10. That goes to 14.
I probably should have said investigation instead of insight, but whatever.
Add 3 then.
So add 3 to the 10 or 3
well,
more?
Well, to the 14. I rolled a 10, got a 14 for insight. Take the 10. It's a 17 for investigation.
Okay. That makes more sense. Okay. So while you yourself don't have a lot of understanding of what this device is, it does smell very strongly of sulfur, but it has a lot of moving parts in it. So, and it's definitely machined in nature, possibly even mass-produced. You can see casting marks on it.
Right.
There's a reasonable chance that if you showed it to someone skilled in engineering, that they would be able to tell you what it's designed for.
Okay. then that might not be Lord Idris because he's more of a wizard. How far is our town or our farm from town? Like an hour walk? Short walk? Less than that?
A little less than a day.
A little less than a day.
Yeah, so you are ending the impromptu birthday party
so it's night.
The sun's going down.
Yeah, no, okay. Well, then we can do this tomorrow. But that's his plan for tomorrow, then, is to take this strange thing into town to see if there... I'm sure there's somebody in there who may be able to help him figure out what it is.
Oh, you've got a pretty good idea of who you could take it to figure out what it is.
Good, then that's his plan.
But they don't live
in
town.
Tomorrow. Oh. Oh, Fiddle Punch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, that's not a bad... And he lives farther away, doesn't he?
He does.
But
you would probably have to go into town and then go north of town. Because you're in the southern end of the kingdom.
Right.
So it's a day's journey to get to the town and then another day's journey to get up. Well, half a day's journey, roughly, to get to the tower.
How? Well, he has a ritual that he could go... he has a phantom steed that would go 10 miles in an hour. So would that be something... Is his tower more than that from town?
I don't feel like doing math. At 9:14 on a Saturday night, so I'm going to say that would allow you to make the journey within a single day.
Okay, then we'll try that. We'll do that tomorrow.
Okay.
That's his end of the night.
Okay. Obame, did you come to town, or are you... I'm sorry, did you come to the farm, or did you stay in town?
No, I stayed in town.
Okay. All right, dawn breaks, and this is the point where if Eric wasn't playing this evening, I would say Obame casts Mending, but he's here, so oh well. Ari has a plan for today. Is there anyone else who has a plan?
I usually just follow.
All right. So that's two. Vex, do you continue to make big holes in little things?
No, I'm not going to just continue firing arrows into the training things. I'm going to... So the other two have temples and followings.
Yes.
I had something going on with people that were converting.
There is a temple to Sylvanas in town, yes. They tend to call it a church here, but there is a church of Sylvanas in town.
I would like to go there.
Okay. And Obame, I'm assuming that you're just going to stay in town for the most part because you're already there?
Correct.
And Fenix, what will you be doing?
Being awesome.
Well, yes, but I'm asking for more details. Where do you intend to be awesome? Who will be looking upon you and basking in your awesomeness? What activities
my
will you be
fellow,
doing to,
my...
to assert this awesomeness?
Okay. I will be seeing if anything needs to be helped with on the construction.
Oh, there's plenty of heavy lifting needed.
Oh, yeah, I'll do some heavy lifting, I guess.
All right. You assert your awesomeness by lifting large rocks and helping to put them in place and cross beams and all that. And you are going to make today significant progress on the first floor.
Nice.
Yes. You haven't put a roof over your head yet, but the walls are taking shape, and this is looking pretty nice. They've shown you some revised blueprints. You do shed a single tear when you see that the stained glass window is made to look like a giant wagon wheel.
Oh, no, I don't just shed a tear. I shed a puddle.
One of the acolytes is put on mop duty. Okay. All right. So let's head to town. Vex, the clerics of Sylvanas are happy to see you. The church that they have set up is in the middle of a park area that was already existed in town. Mm-hmm. They got permission to have their structure be there. Structure is a very loose word. If you are inside it, you are shielded from the elements, from the local flora. But they're not arranged in a way where you can point at something and say, that's a wall or that's a roof.
Mm-hmm.
And as you talk with them, your life is a lot more interesting than theirs.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
To the point where I'm not going to go into the details for it because we're recording this for people to listen
to. No, that's fine. That's fine.
All right.
Well, I just wanted to know I actually had something.
Yes, you do. Obame, you are made aware. You actually were made aware of this earlier, but it was kind of late. They didn't really want to bother you too much because you are, again, one of the more powerful clerics in the realm at this point. So when you come in and say, I want to meditate, they're not like, Oh, but wait, we have all these things we want to talk to you about first.
Usually when I go to something like that, sure, but I have no problem helping anybody out in their time of need. It doesn't matter.
Well, it's kind of the opposite of what Fenix encountered, where they wanted to pester him immediately and nothing he could do would stop that. You don't mind. And they were like, no, we're giving you space. So like when you came up for air and decided to have an evening meal, that's when they let you know that the older Lord Idris is currently dying and isn't so keen on accepting healers, even though several people from this church have offered to go.
Have they, who am I talking to right now, Ari, or just somebody in general?
Ari wouldn't have mentioned it to you if you saw him, because he already knows that he doesn't want, the fervent doesn't want to see another cleric, so.
This would be one of the other acolytes of Ilmater.
I understand. I asked the other acolytes, who has anybody from my party seen him yet?
They don't know.
Decision. So I know it's Lord Idris somewhere around that specific area, so I know Ari's involved. I'm going to go see if I can find Ari.
Okay. Ari, you said you're not stopping in town, though, right?
No, I'm gonna use the horse ritual to head right to Fiddlepunch's tower.
Okay.
Can I go too?
Yeah, I think the horse can handle Meepo's weight. So, yeah, if she wants to tag along, she's more than welcome.
Okay.
There's a few moments where you have to use the umbrella hat, and you sort of hold on to Ari's cloak, and you sort of, like, hang glide because the horse is moving at speed. But you seem to enjoy it. So, Obame, give me an investigation check.
Stand by. Use an actual dice this time, because those dice rolls last time were horrible. 22.
Oh, that's plenty. So you know that Ari was in town and was in the keep itself as well yesterday, but he left very early in the day after buying a significant amount of cake. To spend
that, like, alone might look suspicious.
Can I make a religion check to make sure that it ain't really against somebody's religious? Oh, sorry about that.
Here's the thing. You would have been able to find that information out with a much lower roll, because the baker's pretty much been telling everyone that they got cleared out.
I actually do want to attempt to head over to, I want to see the king.
Okay. Ardent graciously welcomes you, tells you the same story that he's told Ari, so we don't need to repeat that, and says, you know, I would be thrilled if you could help, but he will not see you. I mean, the only blessing here is he's probably too weak to throw a bedpan at you like he did with the first one.
How bad would it be if I was to go see him anyway?
I don't know.
Let's check.
All right. He takes you to his father's chambers, and at outside the door, he says the first thing he's going to ask is if it's another cleric. I can't lie to my father.
Give me 2 seconds. I brokered out my Ankh, and I want to kind of pray to Ilmater and see if he can give me some guidance on this.
Okay. Give me a religion check.
Oh, I'm good at this.
What, the cleric is good at religion?
This is the first for a while. I rolled it.
Ooh.
Okay.
Next thing you tell me, the water is wet and the sun is hot.
All right. So let's see how I should handle it.
You know, if I get a sense of warning or something, you know, that he tells me this may not be a good thing to do, I kind of want to just be able to help him, rely on him to give me guidance.
The sense that you get, you don't get a verbal reply.
No, it's never verbal.
Well, there was one time where it was.
Yeah.
It was in a dream, but it was very verbal, with a lot of imagery. But the feeling that you get is Ilmater is very pleased that you have made this choice, that you are selflessly trying to help, but that your help is, you don't know if it's not needed or if it's not going to actually help. It's sort of a mix between those, and you don't know which it is. So thank you for the sentiment. Feel good about yourself because you feel this way and because you're making these choices, but it's going to be for show because this isn't going to actually help.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I tell the servant, I give him a little
There's no serving. You're talking to the Lord of the Kingdom
here.
Yeah,
I'm the Lord of the Kingdom. I'm just trying to basically give. I don't have anything. I should have made something beforehand. I'm good at medicine. Something to ease his pain. I don't know how he's going to leave if he's even having any pain or anything like that. Okay, very good. I'll tell him. Unfortunately, my Lord above God has told me. Unfortunately, deity has told me this may not be a good thing to do. So I hope everything. Wish him well. I'll be on the way.
You haven't even opened the door.
Nope. No need. Once a deity gives me a no, it's okay.
Ardent nods his head. Give me an insight check.
Oh, he's giving me all these things I'm good at. Yes. 26.
He's a little annoyed. I mean, it takes a lot of mental energy to will himself up to go through this routine. And you didn't. And he was prepared to do this. And then at the last moment, you're like, no, I'm not going to. And intellectually, he can understand. Your God says no, you're not going to go against that and try anyway. But there's an emotional component anyway. He doesn't try to outwardly show this, but there's certain cues you can pick up on, especially with that role. All right, so moving further north, Ari and Meepo, you have arrived at the tower, and the tower is getting some work done, like actively being worked on right now. It is actually covered in a... Now, when you were here last time and the time before that and the time before that, the tower was always a little run down. It had some patchwork right. pieces. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It didn't fare well in the zombie apocalypse scenario. But a lot of that damage is already repaired, and apparently some improvements are being made. There are these strange creatures... that parts of them look like they're metal, parts of them look like they're organic. Their bodies are spherical. They have a giant singular eye in the middle of their face. The body and the head are one unit. The head is the body. Yeah. And they have spindly arms and legs coming out of the sides, and they have these, they look like mechanical wings with feathers attached to them. That they are using to fly around and do various things.
Mr. Ari, what are those?
If I knew, darling, I would tell you.
Give me an Arcana check at disadvantage.
Okay. Disadvantage, all right. Still plus 10 to my roll, but... so that's a 10 and a 5, so we'll take the 5 for 15.
You don't have a clue.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
you may have slept through that particular class.
This looks like... weird transmutation magic, and that's not my area of expertise.
All right, but it is very easy for you to enter. These things don't seem to try to get into your way. They don't necessarily move out of your way either, but it's not too hard for you to get around them. They are primarily focused on their tasks, and you go up the stairs and you find Fiddle Punch, and there's a bunch of them in here also.
Smaller?
No, they're all the same size.
Okay.
They're all roughly about Meepo's height.
All right. Well, once we find Fiddle Punch, I will...
Oh, you find him.
Okay. Good day, sir. How are you faring this fine day?
Honestly, I have no idea.
What's wrong?
They're helping, but I didn't ask for them. I don't control them. I have no idea what they say to each other. They speak a language. I don't know what it is.
So you don't know what they are either.
I appreciate new situations that are learning environments, but at the same time, I don't know what I'm supposed to learn from this.
So where did they come from?
I don't know.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Maybe I can perhaps help.
One of these things comes over and hands Fiddle Punch a clipboard. He looks at it, nods, and hands it back, and it walks off again and says,
I have no idea what was on that clipboard, but if I pretend I know what they're doing, they leave me alone.
I know a spell that will let me understand any language. Perhaps I could cast that upon you. You could learn what they're trying to do, or who sent them, or you tried that.
I do have means of figuring out motives and stuff. They are, for the most part, just repairing and making improvements to the tower. And leaving most of my inventions alone. They didn't leave all of them alone, but apparently, when these things die, they disintegrate. I discovered that at least. But beyond that, they don't really talk to me or talk about anything other than their immediate tasks.
Interesting. They seem to be, at least if nothing else, repairing the tower, but also improving it, perhaps? I don't know. I'm not an engineer. You have no idea who sent them, and you don't know what they're actually communicating to one another.
I know what they're communicating to each other. There are things like, this is too heavy for me to lift. Will you help me with it?
And they, okay, so they get another one to then lift the object or whatever they're doing.
Yes, there's no long-term thought communication going on here. It's immediate tasks only.
Well, I had come here for a bit of a puzzle myself, but you've presented me with one. Mayhap I may be able to give you something to work on for a little while, and maybe I can help figure out what they're doing here.
Oh, certainly. What do you have for me?
And he will pull out the strange metallic contraption that smells of sulfur and hand it to him. And I found this in a home with a lot of strange books, some sort of metal cabinet. And we found odd-looking boxes with silvery screens.
You tap on them, they don't do anything. I tried.
Yeah, we tried. But this was hidden, I believe, in a box of some kind. And I...
You found it in the hands of the girl's father.
Right. Sorry. I took this from the hands of the man or the father of the house. So he was trying to either attack or defend himself with it. I couldn't find anything magical about it, but it smells strongly of, the components one would use, say, for a fireball spell. So I was intrigued, but with no magical auras, it was difficult to determine what it was supposed to do. Perhaps you could offer me some insights into it. And in the meantime, I will see if I can talk to these creatures and perhaps gain some insights into why they're here and what they're doing.
So while you were explaining this, I rolled a check for Fiddle Punch and I got a nat 20.
Yay!
So not only can he explain to you that it's basically a firearm, and he uses whatever language would be appropriate for this fantasy world for that, but he can explain to you the caliber of the shots that would be used and possible chemical properties of whatever propellant was inside of it.
Okay. So he describes bullets.
Pretty much.
He describes how it works and he describes bullets. Does it have any of these particular things loaded within?
It has some. It has the casings. It's a revolver.
Right. So he emptied the weapon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So that's why it smells funny.
Yeah, that's why it smells funny.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Would you like to have that?
I'm sure I can find a place for it.
Excellent. Keep it with my regards and... I'm glad I could at least give you a small challenge, if nothing else.
Okay. He sets it down, and one of these creatures comes over, picks it up, and immediately starts trying to load it.
With what?
Did they know
you
what
don't
it is?
Know.
Yeah. With what? All right. Well, the creature that is over here now examining the firearm, Ari will then begin to cast tongues, and he will touch himself as the target, and this will then let him try to... understand any spoken language it hears for the next hour. So he will listen to the creatures to see if he can learn, see what they're saying to one another, seeing if he can pick up any kind of hint of, like, is there a name they use? Is there some sort of pattern? Like, do they mention something over and over again? Anything like that.
Okay. What you gather from listening to their communication is that they are very methodical. They really only speak when they need to coordinate between each other.
Okay.
For example, moving something that's heavy, or if one of them needs to get out of the way so the other one can do a certain job, or whatever. There's no please, there's no thank you, and there doesn't seem to be any creatures here that are giving the orders for the most part.
Ari would then try to talk to one. Whatever one is, if the one is still trying to attempt to load the weapon, he will talk to that one.
Okay, what do you say?
He will say, you'll kind of greet it, hello, creature.
It does not respond, but when it discovers that it doesn't have the necessary parts to reload the weapon, it puts it down and moves off to another task.
Okay. He will try to find another one, basically try to greet it, wave his hands at it, try to, maybe... get its attention somehow, either touch it or somehow maybe interfere with what it's trying to do, like put a hand in its way or something like that.
Try to get its attention for you.
That's
I can
okay,
help.
Meepo.
I can help.
That's okay. Yeah. Right? Just let me handle this right now.
Okay.
And if it, let's see what happens with that first.
Let it be known that the DM has a really big smile on his face that is totally involuntary. Okay. Your attempts don't seem to do anything for these creatures.
Okay. Is one?
I will allow you to do another Arcana check because you have spent a lot of time interacting with them at this point, even though they're not really acknowledging your presence that much.
Right. Right. I have another spell in mind after this. So, all right. So that's a 16 on the die, which is then going to go to 26.
And it still needs to be at disadvantage.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. I should have said that.
So that? 16 and 18 with the disadvantage.
Okay. So
26.
Okay. So you have now. This wasn't a primary area of focus when you were in school, but.
No.
You did learn about extraplanar creatures, and there is a plane that is ruled by a being called Mechanus.
Yeah, I knew when you described them, but I had to try to figure a way to get it in
yes.
the game.
The plane of law.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of serpents that are referred to as Modrons.
Yeah.
You don't know a whole bunch about Modrons, but they the lower level ones are only following orders. That's what they do.
Right.
Higher level ones will have some autonomy.
And that's the one I want to find at this point. All the ones he sees are all Modrons here.
They would be metagaming. They're monodrones. The name of the entire species is Modron.
Modrons, right? Yeah. He doesn't see then, like, just inside the tower, at least for right now, there's no other differences between any of them. Pretty much all look the same.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
They all came off the same assembly line.
Right.
Literally.
So I will turn back to Fiddle Punch. Well, I think I know what they are. Have you tried any sort of telepathic communications on them?
Telepathy is not one of my strong suits. I'm fairly good at languages and taking things apart. I have not tried to take these apart because I'm afraid they would try to take me apart.
So when they get hurt, they're not disintegrating. I think they're being returned to their plane of existence, Mechanus, or something to that effect. So they're extra planar, I believe. That being said, I know a rather low-level spell that could help me penetrate their mind and perhaps learn what they're thinking. Maybe even learn who sent them, but that might be a bit of a stretch. I suspect these are really just minions doing a job. Although who sent them to do this job, they may not even know. Someone above them may be in charge.
They have an intellect of 4.
So long as if their intelligence is 3 or lower, the spell will fail. So at 4, it still works.
There's just enough room in that empty orb of a head for you to fit your mind in there.
Right. So that's what we're going to... I don't know what this will do. It may agitate them because people who have their minds read tend to get a little upset. If you don't think that's... I mean, given the number of creatures here, if I do that and they do become upset, that could end very badly. If you don't think it's a wise action, I will forbear, and I will leave you to them with this additional knowledge that I have gained.
Well, you remember the whole incident with the train?
I do.
I'm a coward.
Very well, then. I will not disturb their functions. That said, they're extraplanar, so someone or somehow they got sent here or crossed a barrier to get to here. I'm not sure who sent them or what their motive is other than to fix the tower. Marwood actually died, did he not? Because this was Marwood's tower.
He disappeared.
He disappeared.
Yes.
Key thing to note, he disappeared.
Yes. He was very senile, but he was still a very powerful wizard. And when the zombies attacked the tower,
something happened and a body was never found.
He lit out. Okay.
He could have teleported away. He could have teleported some randomly.
He could have gone planar traveling.
He might have gone planar traveling. He might have gone to a beach and conjured up a frilly drink with an umbrella in it. You have no idea.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So my working theory is then, and I will tell this to Fiddlepunch, my working theory is that somehow these may have been sent by Marwood. He knew the tower was going to likely be damaged and may have been able to see it from wherever he's at now. And perhaps he has garnered the services of these creatures to help rebuild his home.
I like that as an idea because it would mean that Marwood is still okay. It could also it could also be because of that. And he points over to the focus that you recovered from the Aboleth's lair in the salt mines.
Right. Could that be attracting them here, you think?
Well, you did say extra planar, and yes, this thing has to do with planar magic.
Of course. So, speaking of that, I believe, now that you bring that up, I believe that house where I took that particular contraption from was also extra planar. I believe that how the entire domicile slipped through some sort of dimensional barrier and arrived here. Didn't it fall? It looked like it was like half open.
It was mostly intact. Most of the damage to it looked like it had been done by the blights that were attacking it. But it was it was not sitting on a foundation. It was leaning to the side a bit.
Leaning to the side. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So somehow it, I believe this, the area, the house or the structure that I found this weapon in, I believe somehow was transported across another barrier or across dimension from wherever it was to ours. So whatever is happening here is now being able to transport entire homes, or at least several cubic feet of matter.
I'm not too surprised. Remember, it wiped out an entire town.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the focus, did we tell him that we lost one? Did he know? We teleported back to his place.
Yeah, you did tell him that now you didn't know her name was Thava at the time.
Yeah.
You still don't technically know that her name is Thava. That's just what she was called.
No, but that's one of her aliases. And it might be something she reuses. So we want to impart that information now to Fiddlepunch. So
you told him that the last time you were here. Yeah, right. He does know about that.
Okay, so Thava has at least, she's acquired some sort of blimp, dirigible, and is now using it. It's made out of adamantine, and she is currently, I guess, using it to go wherever she needs to go. She had infiltrated my mother's business structures and formed a relationship with the dwarves and managed to abscond with several pounds of adamantine and make this blimp. And now it's who knows doing what with it. But she is
I don't think she made that blimp.
No, well,
that sounds like gnomish work.
Yes, I'm sorry, it is gnomish work. I met the creator, actually. Forgot about that. But she now has access to this blimp and is using it.
And I'm getting bored, so I'm going to go follow around one of these big shiny circles.
Okay. Yeah. Ari has now gotten his groove on, completely forgotten about Meepo.
And Meepo noticed, so she's going to go follow around one of these.
Yeah. He's got a mystery on his hands, and he's just like, yeah, whatever, leave me alone.
So wait, Mr. Ari, if these big, round, shiny things came from the same place the house did, then I wonder what they would do with these. And I take out the spoons that I took from the house that are different from the spoons here.
They totally ignore the spoons.
Oh, okay. Put them back.
Well, no, Meepo, I think they came from, there's a number of different planes, a number of different places that exist in this universe, in this world. And the house came from one. These creatures came from another. They're attracted to the focus that we brought here. It explains some, but not all of their behavior. Why are they building? I mean, unless that's just their nature.
I don't know. I'm going to follow one around and see what it is.
Okay.
Do that.
Mm-hmm. Give me a perception check.
Me?
Both of you.
Okay.
Sight-based?
Yes.
I've rolled a 19, and
as
perception is a plus 1, so I have a 20.
And I rolled a 19 and 11, so that's 19 for me. And my perception total is 4, so that goes to 23.
Okay. Something flies past the window.
Ooh,
it is
what was
something
that?
Big. It is something moving very fast. And is something that, as it goes past, a few of these creatures fall from the sky and there's a clatter on the ground below. You're several floors up, so it's a bit of a distance that they fall. Most of it you don't catch, even with that roll, because of the speed that's moving. But you do manage to see a long, spiky tail. It's white, and at the end of it is a nasty-looking stinger.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to end it.
Okay, that's a good spot to end.
Wow. Yeah.
You are listening to Words of Jen, where I read to you one piece of my writing in each and every episode. BookofJen.net.